Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to another edition of On Mic with Jordan Rich, where conversation is alive and well with creative people who have a lot to say and a lot to offer. Today's guest is an old friend of mine. His name is Michael Togias. That's spelled T-O-U-G-I-A-S. And he's the author of several big bestsellers, including The Finest Hours and many other books about seagoing adventures and rescues. He's now written Extreme Survival, Lessons from Those Who Have Triumphed Against All Odds. It is moving, it is inspiring, and you learn a little bit about human intestinal fortitude. So I can't wait to talk to my friend. Let's welcome him now, Michael Togias, who joins us on mic. With all of your vast experience interviewing and researching these amazing stories, it stands to reason that osmosis took over and you learned a lot as you went along. Is that the reason you put together Extreme Survival?
Yes, I thought to myself, I'd be a fool not to extract some of these lessons and apply them to my own life when I face adversity. Nothing like extreme survival, but still they're valuable lessons. So I began, you know, many years ago, the genesis of this book was in the back of my head. So I started keeping files by the mental mindsets that each survivor used, and then saw some commonalities and started to group them together.
There are lots of heroics in play, but there are also very much ordinary people in extraordinary circumstances. So we'll have you explore some of these with me. But when you meet these people, at first glance, you say, well, they just look like anybody on the street, any neighbor, anybody you might run into in the supermarket. Why don't you give us a little overview as to the stories in the book? Because I read through it and I loved it. But the range of stories, let's talk about that, Michael.
You know, the book opens with two survival at sea stories, because that had been my specialty. I'd done 8 books of survival and rescue at sea. But in this book, I wanted to branch out. So we've got mountain climbers. We have prisoner of war. We have people who were kidnapped. We have Holocaust survivors and people from history as well, who I never interviewed, such as Mary Rowlandson, who was taken captive during King Philip's War. So I would say in Extreme Survival, I interviewed probably 60% of the people featured, and the other 40% were from history.
It's interesting. One story strikes me every time I think about the book. I think about the story of the little girl who's the teenager girl who's attacked in her own bedroom, and her parents are in the other room. It sends a chill up one's spine to think about these things. But whether it's an urban myth or not, a woman, a mom, gets super, super duper human strength and can lift the car off the child's leg. That's a fine example of just people finding intestinal fortitude to fight for what's important, their own children.
Yeah, that story stuck with me as well. But for more of a different reason of how rapid they realized what was happening. There was like not a second of hesitation, where if you wake me up from a cold sleep, I'd be like, well, you know. But they did all the right things in boom, boom, boom fashion. And there so many accidents they investigate, people are in denial. I write about the Costa Concordia, that big Italian cruise ship, and the captain's telling everybody, stay calm, everything's under control. And thank God it was a passenger who noticed the ship was listing and calls the Coast Guard.
It's so true, Michael. I've been in hotels, at parties, at events, when the fire alarm goes off and people just ignore it, assuming it's just, it happens all the time, or a car alarm on the street outside the apartment. I want to go through the table of contents, because I think this makes sense. When I was reading it, I realized there was a progression that you had in mind here. And I want to start with chapter 1, The Power of Little Steps and Survivors' Mindsets. these were the rescues at sea, right? And the little things that people did, they didn't seem that important at the time, but they turned out to be vital. Share with us a story or two from that early chapter.
Two Massachusetts men, two very different stories, but Brad Kavanaugh found himself on a sailboat with four others that capsized in a storm. And I opened the book with that because he described it to me. When we're in the Zodiac, the waves are enormous. I looked up into a wave and there were sharks. One was bigger than our Zodiac. And even worse, it was looking down at me. And from there, he says to himself, this is my reality. I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to take it as far as I can and just go 1 hour at a time. And that's exactly what he did. Only two out of the five in the life raft made it.
And a lot of times, and case in point, the professionals in a situation like that are the ones who succumb, the pick of the litter, I guess. And it's those who have no experience have to sort of fend for themselves. They have this knack of coming up with the little things that make the big difference.
Yeah, they'll string together. You know, the other one in that opening chapter was Ernie Hazard. He gets hit by a 100-foot rogue wave at George's Bank off Cape Cod. And he just said to himself from the get-go, I am probably not going to make it, but I'm going to go down fighting. And he started to string hour after hour together. And by the way, his ordeal happened in late November. So if you can imagine, 3 days at sea, wet in late November, how do you survive?
Well, that's
no
the thing.
Survival suit.
It was a miracle, and they couldn't figure it out. The Coast Guard, the rescuers, they couldn't figure out how this man was alive.
when they pulled up to the domed life raft, I interviewed the man who was at the wheel of the little launch who went up from the cover. He said, I expected four dead men inside, and when I touched the life raft, all of a sudden the door opened. There's a man with a black beard, and his skin was a blue-purple, and I almost had a heart attack because he was alive.
He was alive. Amazing. Another chapter has to do with intuition, that feeling you get that something isn't right. And I don't know if you can explain this scientifically or not, or any of us can, but it does play a part in a lot of these survival stories, doesn't it? Somebody makes the right move at the very last second because they just sense something is not right.
It sure does. And I don't know if this is scientific or not, but I have, through the research, come up with my own definition of why we think it's something mysterious and we can't put our finger on it. I think it's subconscious clues coming to us, but we can't articulate them. We're not sure where they're coming from, but something's telling us either go for it or stay away, that something doesn't feel right. And Deb Kiley, who was in that life raft with Brad Kavanaugh, later had a great quote. She said, a list of pros and cons is not always as important as whether it feels right or not.
I think you go with your gut many times. It's the right way to go. The book is called Extreme Survival. We're talking with Michael Togas, who's been a long time friend of this program, whatever program I'm doing. I'm doing a podcast now, and Michael and I have talked about some amazing at-sea rescues that he's covered. But this is more personal, and it delves into the individuals who have figured out a way, maybe not even consciously at the time, to survive. Let's go to the Holocaust and examples like that, because you mentioned one of my favorite people, Viktor Frankl, Elie Wiesel, and people like that. It seems almost unreal, which is why there are people who actually deny it happened. But what did you learn from talking with Holocaust survivors and doing your research?
So many wanted to give up, and they said, what pushed me onward a little longer was to tell the world what was happening, to somehow survive this and let the world know of these atrocities. So they were thinking beyond just themselves for a much larger purpose. And I had seen that in some survivors I interviewed from other ordeals as well, where they said, I started to cry, I was ready to give up. And then I thought of one person who needed me to come back. And so I kept that image of that person in my head.
And that's a very powerful driving force to stay in there, to hang in there, isn't it? The idea that if I die and just succumb and just give up, then maybe, just maybe, the world, in this case with the Holocaust, won't know what happened to me or millions of my family and friends.
Yeah. You mentioned Viktor Frankl. He used to, while he was in the concentration camp, imagine later he'd be speaking to crowds and telling them exactly how it happened, how the Nazis rose to power. And it happened. That's what he did later in life.
It didn't happen in a great number of cases, but there are certain people who had the ability and the desire to do that. The book is beautifully written, and there are lessons learned at the end of each chapter, your lessons that you're sharing with us. Let me go to a few more of these chapter headings because I think it's important. Help from within and help from beyond. I don't care. You know, the atheist in the foxhole story for me rings true. Share with us some insight. What did you learn about people and that connection with the beyond and within?
Well, Jordan, at first I debated, should that even be in the book, because I was like, these people are hearing voices or feeling a presence. But over and over, through both historical figures, and I can rattle off a few of those, and people I interviewed would say, no, Mike, this was not in my head. This was not me talking. This was a clear voice at a decisive time that told me exactly what to do. And that goes back to like Joshua Slocum, the first one to solo navigate the world in his sailboat. And then I interviewed a Black Hawk helicopter pilot. You wouldn't think he'd want to share that, hey, a voice came to me, told me exactly what to do in this emergency. But he said, oh, no, put it in the book. This, it happened.
Yeah, these people are very proud and happy to tell their story. And again, these are not whack jobs. These are very grounded individuals who've been through an ordeal, but they are grounded nonetheless. You know, MacGyver has always been a popular character on TV, and there's a new version of that series. And one of the things I loved was the stories about people who figured out a way to make use of something, even something minuscule and seemingly innocuous, to save their lives. People will come up with ways, some people will come up with ways to figure something out based on whatever they have to use in front of them, don't they?
Yeah, in the book, Johnny Vitalik, his car goes off a ravine, and he's trapped in it because his feet, the steel came in and crushed his feet. He can't move. But he figured out, take off the fabric over the ceiling above you, extract some long wire. He could see a little trickle of a stream 20 feet away. He tied his T-shirt to the end of the wire, cast it out the window, let it get wet, bring it back, wring out the fluid into his mouth. And it was interesting. I had researched him, but I couldn't track him down. And then I got a call. This had just happened 2 nights ago. And I got a call, and it was him. And he said, you know, I loved what you did. But he said, there's more to the story. And he told me his back was broken, and he spent 16 days trapped in the car. And I kept saying, I could have not lasted a week, and I would have never figured out the wire and the T-shirt. And I kept saying, surely there's something in your background that would indicate you could do this. And he was very modest. And then finally, I kept saying, how about as a teenager? Because my other survivors did something as a teenager. And he did say, well, I was a Green Beret.
Doesn't hurt.
And I said, aha. So training does help. And other survivors said, oh, in my teenage years, like Ernie Hazard, the one in the 100-foot rogue wave, said, I rode my bike from Canada to Mexico. And I said, your motorcycle? And he said, no, my bicycle.
Yeah.
I go, who'd you go with? He goes, alone. I go, where'd you stay? He goes, by the side of the road. And I go, aha, you had this independent maverick streak. So when disaster hit and you were alone, you could handle it better than, say, myself.
Michael, I want to ask you this question. You interviewed so many people, and with some exceptions, I'm sure, most of these people seem very humble. They've gone through an ordeal. They might have saved other lives, certainly saved their own lives. What's the link that binds all these people together? I would say it's probably a similar link to that of the greatest generation of soldiers during World War II who returned and didn't want to talk about their exploits. many of them were dark, but they didn't want to do that. What do you think is happening here?
Exactly what you said, and not all wanted to talk. It would take me a little bit of convincing, and then, you know, they would realize, okay, he's going to tell the complete story, and I want to get the facts straight, because some of them did not come out straight when it first happened. So, but they were quite humble about it and would make jokes and say, oh, I got lucky here and lucky there. And there was some luck involved. But I think oftentimes luck is an attitude and your antenna is up for any opportunity. And then the lucky people seize on it.
There's the one story that everybody knew about when it happened. And there was a movie made about the man who cut his arm literally off to save his life. That's, to many,
that's extreme.
Quite extreme. So there are different levels, I guess, of how far would you go. But that just proved that he would go that far to live a life. And he's lived a life. He lives a life because of that. It's fascinating.
Yeah. So many go on to have, they're not debilitated by what happened to them. I think of Howard Blackburn, who in a storm in the sub-freezing temperatures, his hands were around the oars to get to land, and he lost all his fingers because of that. Mm-hmm. He then later goes on to take a sailboat across the Atlantic, only 22 feet, solo, and he breaks the world record, and he has no fingers.
Amazing.
How do you go back on the very ocean that almost took your life?
Well, it's the old expression, you get off the horse, you fall off the horse, you get back up. But in this case, yeah, it's insane to us, to us regular folk, to these other people, it's something else. What about those who saved others? Do they have a different perspective on their lives going forward, do you think?
Very subtle, Jordan. I would think there'd be big changes if you go through any kind of ordeal like this, but it was very subtle. Little things like, I don't let the little things bother me anymore.
Yeah,
rolls right off my back. And I'm like, I try so hard to do that myself, but I'm not always successful.
Right.
I'll stop and enjoy the moment. I may take the long way to work to see the sunrise, little things like that, but not huge changes, no.
Mm. The sea, you've written about it extensively, some of the most exciting true life stories, many have been made into films. Does it ever surprise you that people are still going out on the ocean, tempting fate? I mean, the idea, it scares me to go to the beach, but I mean, the idea of being in waters that could turn on an instant. I know boating is a lot safer than it ever was, but what are people thinking when they're out there? They're thinking it's going to be okay, I guess, right?
I'm on the ocean all the time, whether in a kayak, a boat. In fact, last night I was out there in the dark in waders.
Oh, wow.
Fishing for a striped bass. So I think it's our love. And yeah, I've even had a couple close calls. But I think it's our love for that sport or the passion, whatever it is, that brings us back.
So there are two forces at play. There's nature, which is pretty objective. It doesn't say, I want to hurt you and not me. It's going to hurt everybody in that path. And then there are the man-made disasters, the evils that individuals or groups of individuals can do. You've interviewed people on both sides of the aisle. Do you notice any difference in the way people fought through or in the way they reacted to these, whether they were human or natural events?
No. Big difference. I do, you know, one person that we all know that comes to mind is John McCain, where, you know, it was the torture he was going through. But he had a phrase. He said, steady strain. And I was like, what does that mean? And I dug down deeper into the research. And what he was saying was, don't get too high when there's rumors of release, because I'd seen men crash and burn from despair. And try not to get too low. And then, and this was the important one for me, is as long as it takes. I'm not going to put an artificial deadline on this. So
right.
More recently in my own life, I got long COVID and I was down and out for 6 months. And I kept saying to myself, steady strain. You can't put a like a timeline. Oh, you'll be better in 5 months. You'll be better in 4 months. You just have to do your best and it will happen.
You were very honest, but not specific as to going through some stuff. And I appreciate you sharing that because, yeah, I mean, especially when you don't know, when there's not a firm answer, when you're in the middle of a gale storm and sharks are floating around, and you don't know if anyone's coming to rescue you, that's where the fear and the horror comes in. So this all helped you deal with your own situation, knowing all these people and interviewing them and working this through?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that the power of little steps, I break down something that felt overwhelming into, okay, just take it a couple hours at a time. I would give myself pats on the back. You know, if I had one day where I, from that long COVID, if I just was lying on the couch all day, that'd be one thing. But then the next day, if I accomplished something, even just researching something online, I said, okay, you did something positive today. Give yourself a pat on the back. And because survivors would do that, Ernie Hazard in his life raft out there in and out of the gale would talk to himself. Good job, Ernie. You made a good decision. Now do it again, you know, and he would give himself pep talks. So I think many of us are looking for accolades from the outside or praise from the outside, and that never comes.
No, your praise can come from the inside that you, like you say, you accomplished something. That we started out talking about the little steps, the tiny moves to make to at least stay stable. And the chapter that I wanted to refer to, chapter 11, has a lot to do with this: emotion, adrenaline, and the advantage of pausing and reversibility. I would just love you to tell the story about that chapter, because emotion guides everything we do. Adrenaline is key to survival, but whether or not you have the stamina to stop and reverse course. Share with us a bit about that, if you would, Mike.
Sometimes adrenaline can be the enemy. If, you know, some folks listening might have been lost in the woods, and I have, and the feeling is, get out of here, night's closing in, and you want to run, and you're trying to tamp that down. And I had to force myself, just sit down on the ground for a minute and take stock of the situation so you don't start running and twist an ankle. And I think even in the workplace, I use an example of years ago when I worked in corporate America, I got a condescending email and I let my emotions get the best of me and I fired right back, turned into a big brouhaha. And I was like, all I had to do was not respond, sleep on it, let a day go by, and I would have given a much more measured response.
Right. The old don't hit send, think about it.
Exactly. Just pause. Yeah. And now I always pause. If something is upsetting coming in from whatever, it's like, okay, don't respond right away.
Well,
don't take the bait.
That's why all of this stuff in Extreme Survival is a thrill to read, because it's on the edge of your seat stuff. But it really tells us more about ourselves in everyday life and all the hitches we have and all the challenges we have. And we can really overcome so much. And I think that's the boundless human spirit thing that you got going on in this book that is certainly going to elevate people. What are you working on? Can you share with us what you're working on beyond this wonderful tome? And you have another story that you're investigating?
Well, so many of my books have a serious subject, such as, you know, Overboard or Fatal Forecast. That's the one about Ernie Hazard. I every probably third book, I like to do something fun. So in the past, I wrote a book called There's a Porcupine in My Outhouse, about my cabin in Vermont, how I tried to live up there like a mountain man and failed miserably. It's a little like Bill Bryson's A Walk in the Woods.
Pointed humor, so, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now I'm doing a book, and they just put chapter one in Boston Globe magazine 2 weeks ago. And the title is There's a Groundhog in My Salad, and it's a vegetable gardening book of my tales of woe.
I love
how the battles I've had creating this massive garden.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that you take a break from this. Anybody who's in a tough kind of business, whether it be healthcare or law or medicine or any kind, or you know, dealing with a lot of hardship and agony, you got to take that break. Your body and your mind needs it. So good for you for doing that. And how do you feel now in terms of your physical health? Are you restored to vim and vigor?
I would say I'm 99%. A little bit of discomfort and a left lung, something was going on there, but that's so minor. I'm active. Like I said, I was out in the ocean last night in the dark, had a big striped bass fight. My rod snapped in half, but
wow.
I landed the fish. So I feel like I am taking life every day and enjoying it.
I have known you professionally now for a couple of decades. We've talked many times, and I'm so happy to hear that news. And the book is called Extreme Survival. I would hope that this would be one of your bestsellers, because a lot of people will get a lot of inspiration from it. I did. I mean, I just reading about what these people went through and continue to go through, astounding. And it makes the little things seem a little bit easier to attain.
Yeah, it does help us. I had dinner the other night. I was giving a presentation. Woman at the table said, I read it and I'm a mental health therapist and I'm giving it to some of my patients. And I was like, yes, that was my dream when I was writing it, that this will help the average Joe.
Yeah, it really has a lot to do with our minds, our ability to think and feel and calm ourselves down for a few moments to do that. Mm-hmm. I thought it was exceptionally well done. You're as good a therapist with this as anybody I've interviewed. You know, he's written so many great best-selling books. Let's have you spell your website so people will get it right.
Okay, and because there are some of the survivors on videos I took posted mm-hmm. there, letting them tell how they got through it. It's Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L. And then my last one is a tough one. It's T as in Tom, O-U-G-I-A-S, S as in Sam.com. So just MichaelTogas.com.
Yeah, you are smart enough to actually provide a pronunciation guide on a lot of your literature, because it looks like Tugias, but Togas, yes. We're going with Togas, which is from the man himself. Michael, I'm so happy to connect with you again. The book, Extreme Survival, available anywhere you find terrific reads. I loved it, and I really also want to say that you are an exquisite writer. Your prose and your ability to put words together and make them really click right on target. So good for you.
Thank you, Jordan. What a great interview. Thank you.
Michael Tugas with Extreme Survival, Lessons from Those Who Have Triumphed Against All Odds. I want to thank you for subscribing and downloading the podcast. Ratings and reviews are much appreciated. Find out more, go to my website, jordanrich.com. And as always, dear friends, remember to be well so you can do good. Till next time, take care.